you.
Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings, the automatically deleted husband, and deleted again in two ways. I got another card today. Isn't it great? You know, this is the artwork on this is fantastic. I wonder who took that picture. But there's a couple things about this. One is the girl that took the picture. My favorite first daughter, as she's known, she's actually the one who I sent the postcard to. And if you look at the Promise site, Kozlowska.org/promise-2022-07-22, today's card. But the artwork I used is from her website. It text says, if you're trying, then you're doing amazing. She used that similar expressions about being amazing and so forth a lot. And I did label it my favorite unicorn-haired blogger. Why did I do that? Because she had a website, unicorn-haired blogger, and that's gone. And then she had another website, ericasams.com. That's gone. You know, but there's someone who copied a bunch of that locally. Who would that be? Oh yeah, that's me. And that's why the image is there, because I have a local copy. Yes, I know, I'm a vicious fellow, but what can I say? I'm the geek. But I used that photo because I wanted to make a point. I wanted to let her know I'm here. And that I am actively pursuing her and have been actively reading what she wrote. There are several articles on there that are less than flattering. And I would contend there's some truth in it and there's some fallacy. But that would require dialogue. Well, you know, she claims to be the atheist, but what's the difference between the way she acts and the way the MetaView, Covenant Presbyterian, Jim Cross, my wife, act? What's the difference? Maybe there is no difference between an atheist and a church member. Could be. But there's the but. You know, the card I got was the card I sent to Susanna. Yesterday was the card that I sent on the 10th anniversary of my wife abandoning me. And the card I sent afterwards, this one, to Susanna, says, Susanna, do you remember our date 15 years ago yesterday? Do you know the story about Mr. Tamal on the same day? And let me get rid of this. Mr. Tamal, as fond viewers will know, because it's let me grab it here, since that would be Susanna. Okay, because the sticker's over. You can see it linked with today's today's postcard online. Okay, all right, so that was covered in that. But if you go to that site, and you know, with Susanna's card, you have obviously the card, and already the image of the return card is there, and it'll go on the wall. You can see, remember from yesterday, there was that little gap there. Well, that's gone now, so there'll be a new card there here. And probably a few minutes. Where this card is online has the picture of my Susanna. Susanna at play, an infamous day. And of course the link to collateral murder, because that was the day. And I can't express how much this had an impact on me. I think about the deception that goes on and some of the things I even discussed, such as yesterday, about the way we have to grab on to what we believe is true or what our collective does. I mentioned things like how things are falling apart in Ukraine and so forth. And I wonder about the people there. You know, one analogy that's often used, because the Nazi influence is apparently extremely strong, the evidence of it's overwhelming. Even Zelensky recently stated about how many people in Ukraine have a respect for Mr. Bandera from the Nazi era, who was a Nazi collaborator. And, you know, he is honored there. And this, he's one of the people that people like the Reich Sector, the Azov Battalion, and others, they endorse, because, you know, these are the people with it. They literally tattoo themselves with Nazi insignias. But, you know, one of the things I heard about early on is, I think it was like February or March, it was fairly early in the recent events, because remember, the war is 8 years old. The government took a whole bunch of arms that they had in stock and simply dumped them, literally dumped them in the streets, and said, anyone, come take them, and they emptied the jails too at the same time. So people, in order to be able to defend the country, that was the allegation. And of course, you have now a huge market, black market, for guns and things of that nature. Most of those were rifles and things of that nature. But what's happened since, because obviously the U.S. has been sending arms like crazy, you know, because obviously, you know, the taxpayer pays the military-industrial complex to ship arms that get used, and the military-industrial complex makes a lot of money. That's the whole point of this. But you got past the rifles and things of that nature, and now you can find on the black market, I've seen some of the ads on the, you know, the so-called dark web, you can buy, you know, anti-tank weapons. You know, because I saw an interview with somebody, I forget who it was, who went and contacted, you know, yeah, you can get an anti-tank, one of these, was it a Javelin or whatever it is, for $30,000. Because, you know, and, you know, so you and the need for a Javelin or, you know, anyway, a lot of these weapons you can buy now. Apparently a new one has shown up either on the market or it's either on the, I don't think it's on the market. Actually, I think from what I understand, it may have been captured by the Russians. The veracity of this apparently is being questioned. The HIMARS system, you know, we sent maybe like a dozen to them, because we don't have that many. And from what I understand, we sent a third of our stock of missiles for it, because, you know, they're expensive and we don't have that many. There is, I think, somewhere where, I think several were already destroyed, but apparently there may have been some captured, which I find fascinating, because, I mean, the whole point of this is just to make money. Kill a few people, what does it matter? We make a lot of money. That really is. And it concerns me because of the ripple effects. One of the things I've wondered for a long time, is what would happen is, you know, some of these weapons that, again, now, because the marketplace for the mercenary is huge, and there are a lot of people who will go to various countries. There's a whole bunch of people fighting in Ukraine right now from all sorts of different countries. Because they feel it's important? No, because it's good money. It's because it's good money. And, you know, there's ways to do it by getting paid, and there's ways to do it by acquiring weapons and selling them. And that's a huge market too, because there's an interest in these kind of weapons. And I, you know, obviously they get used there. They'll be used in places like other places nearby that are having contention. You know, obviously there was a whole bunch acquired in Libya when we overthrew that country, and we lost a lot of weapons. And a lot of those weapons were captured by ISIS, ended up in Syria, and used there. So I think these kind of things will happen again. But one of the things I wonder about is what happens if one of those weapons ends up in the United States. You know, we have a whole bunch of people who have lots of security and things of that nature. You know, whether it's an easier target would be like a governor, Capitol building or whatnot. The U.S. Capitol may be slightly more difficult, but only slightly, because it's one thing to go there with a rifle. It's another thing to go there with an anti-tank weapon. And I think, you know, because I remember in 91, was it 91 where we went to Washington, D.C. for the, was it the 50th anniversary of Human Events magazine, 30th anniversary, whatever it was. We went there, went to the, you know, the event and so forth. But the day of or the day before, we took a tour, you know, walked. We didn't go into the White House, but we walked around it, things of that nature. And so we did tour around that. But, you know, think about somebody simply driving by in a van or whatnot. And then, you know, maybe opening the door, maybe not. And then firing off towards the White House, towards, again, another government building, a significant one, whatnot. And I wonder why that hasn't happened yet. Here or in another country, obviously. It does surprise me. But because of the significant loss of weapons in Ukraine, you know, especially like the anti-tank weapons, they pack a little bit of a punch. And I do wonder if sooner or later one of those would be acquired and get used. And what kind of ripple effect will that have? Whether it's domestic, whether it's foreign, what kind of ripple effect will that have? It's an interesting question. I told you about Erica Lee, and, you know, the card to Susanna. But other things that are related that you might want to know about. One is, I'll leave you a link. I watched, while I ate today, I watched a video from James Corbett. It's a series he's just started to release called The Media Matrix. And he released the first one about, what was it called? The Gutenberg Conspiracy or something of that nature. Whatever it's called. I sat there and watched it. It's only like 30 minutes. And it was, you know, my family may remember because I sent them the DVDs from, he did the series on the Federal Reserve, gave the history of the Federal Reserve. He did one history in World War One. Those were very good, very insightful. And I think they were very worthwhile. This one, I'm guessing, will be the same quality, and thus far for the first part, it seems to be. But he mentioned the impact of the printing press that Gutenberg did. And he mentioned, you know, related figures, specifically, you know, Martin Luther, because obviously at that point he had made a little bit of a splash too. And, you know, because... one of the things that Luther did, obviously, was translate the Bible into his native German so people could read it. And then when you have the Gutenberg being able to produce, mass-produce Bibles, that was a significant turning point in helping take away the authority or the dominance of the Roman Catholic Church. And, you know, he mentioned a good bit about that. And... He talked mostly about print, but my guess is part two, because he left the hint about what comes next is what happens with radio, coming into play about 100 years ago. Because obviously, that changed the world dramatically because suddenly, the idea was, before the printing press, for one person to express to a crowd was rather difficult. The writing was slow. Then with the printing press, that became where one person could express something to a huge audience. And then radio did the same thing. But the one of the big differences is, which I assume he'll mention, is it reduced the time. Because if I print something, then I have to get it to you, it could be days or weeks. If I'm on the radio, you get it basically instantly. And then, of course, you know, one of the things I remember, because I remember listening to a discussion about what happened in the UK, I think it was just post World War II. It may have been in the 50s, something of that nature, where there was a community where the normal thing, you know, it's the end of the day and people are out by, I think it was a river and whatnot, the crowds would gather and so forth. But suddenly, for some reason, a bunch of apparently used TVs were brought to this community and given away. And suddenly the parks and the river where people would gather became quiet. They disappeared. Because we no longer gathered publicly, we gathered in our homes and listened to the television. And it changed culture radically. Same thing, you know, you can see the old pictures of, well, especially 1940s, when you had the family gathering around the radio and listening to world events. Or speaking of world events, you know, the one of the big events was the War of the Worlds broadcast, again, about 100 years ago. That was rather significant in the cultural experiment that it was. But then, of course, now we've switched one step further to the internet. Because one of the things that happened, he points out, again, and because I pointed it out before, how years ago, who was it, Hearst or whatever, whatever group it was, Morgan or whoever it was, because I remember hearing about this discussed many times, said how many, you know, what do we need to do in order to gain control of the press across the nation, obviously before radio and TV became the dominant players, how much control do we have to have in order to set the narrative? And the response was, well, we stated again in this program, about 25 papers. So they went and bought them and put somebody in there in order to control the narrative. And it worked. And you can see that today. You know, again, use the obvious example. COVID-19. You only have one narrative that's allowed. Whether it's in, you know, broadcast media, brought to you by Pfizer, for obvious reasons. You know, if my paycheck comes from my advertiser is Pfizer, and if I give a news information that makes their product look bad, I'm not going to have a job, am I? That's our free press. So, you know, you have that kind of influence. And then, of course, you know, as I pointed out, the connection between the corporate players, the government players, and the intelligence community is extremely strong. So you have to stick with the narrative. Otherwise, you have some difficulties, which goes back to what James Corbett talks about in what happened to people when they would violate the narrative. Once you can control the narrative with the printing press, or now radio, television, and the internet. Reason I bring that all up is because there are some people who, in various ways, have been trying to reduce the amount of control that the major players. You know, the obvious example is YouTube, which, again, in previously that would have been considered monopolistic practices, what they do. But of course, today they get away with it fine. You have some competitors, you know, like BitChute, Brighteon, Minds, which I don't go to because apparently they got a lot of pornography when I checked a long time ago and I'm not interested. And there's Odyssey and others. and Shofar Nexus, because obviously that's what I use for publishing videos. And that process is continuing and obviously become very much the focus. And in order to have removed the control from the centralized authority, and that is the purpose of Shofar Nexus, to remove that centralized control so I don't have the control either. So I've been working towards that, and I've been using the email software as the driver. And I had it working sort of, you know, the local copy kind of working. And then I made a design change earlier in the week and looked at it today, and it was kind of like not quite right. And I did a third iteration, kind of my norm, and got one step further. Because I sent an email today from my email address, you know, john@kozlowski.org, to Alice at, no, I sent it to Bob. I didn't send it to Alice, I sent it to Bob. Anyway, Bob at demo.kozlowski.org. And it got there. There's some issues. Hopefully I'll get that fixed tomorrow. But it's coming to reality. And so hopefully I'll have it polished a little bit, and then I'll go out to my currently fairly small mailing list, but people who are, at least there are several who are now actively engaging me, and say, okay, let me turn on an account for you and get people to experiment and give me constructive criticism in order to refine the product. Because again, one of the differences is I'm not just doing email, I'm using email as the driver, but it's also to be able to do other kind of communications, you know, such as voice and video. That video would be kind of the pinnacle. Depending upon what kind of interactions I get, I'll have the email working and probably the email list stuff working, and then I'll go as whatever, you know, basically whatever brings in the funding. Because I've done it before where I have been able to send, like, for example, text messages to a phone. Problem with that, of course, is there's a cost because I'm paying a third party. And then add the, you know, they're called SIP calls, where I can make a phone call. And so Shofar Nexus, hopefully, that'll probably be a couple months. We'll be making phone calls. You know, again, because I have a number, I've had a number for a long time where I've used to send text messages, and it'll receive phone calls, but I haven't used it to a degree yet. I have a phone number in Athens, Tennessee, that, you know, I have a phone number in Salisbury, North Carolina, in Texas, I think it's Dallas, in Beverly Hills, California. So I have four phone. I used to have one in Poland, but I got rid of that because there were restrictions and whatnot, so I just didn't bother anymore. But because I was doing this more thoroughly some years ago, and then it kind of. But so, you know, again, I'll probably do the text thing first because it's simpler and it's consistent with the idea of emails. So hopefully I'll have that working here in, that might be a couple months, depending upon how things go. But then follow that up with being able to make a phone call via Shofar Nexus. It's finally happening. So my hope is I will be delivering the complete email and having a few friends have a test email account so I can get constructive criticism and maybe through that find the market. And I was thinking, what domain do I use? So I'm wondering about using, you know, go get somebody, Bob, and give them an email address of bob@heritagesystems.com, because, you know, I still own that. But, you know, just as a way to experiment. But, you know, it opens the door. And again, the issue is going to be because, and I want to find somebody else to explain this, but the issue is it opens the door to anonymity, which is a, you know, the typical double-edged sword. Because now my state doesn't know about me or the corporate players. But also if I'm malicious, that works to my advantage too. But, you know, most people driving down the road are not malicious. Some are. So do you turn off control of the roads because somebody might be malicious? Now, obviously, I think it's, there's foolishness to that. But anyway, one last thing, because I just thought of it. There's a gentleman that I have engaged for many weeks now at the farmer's market. He and his family, they offer various things. I actually have some of, I ate some of his green peppers from last Saturday, and I've had got a bar of soap from him that I've used. He does a video, which he says he does it 3 times a week, and including dad jokes, which, you know, that really, really, but, you know, I'm a dad, so I understand. What he does at the end of the videos is say, you know, click to subscribe, doesn't cost you anything. And so when I saw him last Saturday, I basically told him, that's not true. Because when you subscribe on YouTube, it's not that, oh, that's free. It's a data collection process. It's used to establish relationships. It is a data collection process. You know, there are alternatives. For example, one of the things, and I have it already in Shofar Nexus, is it's called the RSS feeds. The really simple syndication is what it stands for. That's been out since the 1990s. A way that I can say, I'm interested in this website, that website, or another. And when new information comes out, I can get it. There's no subscription process whatsoever. The reason you have the subscription process is you have to sign in. And then they can tell you because they know you. That is the fundamental purpose behind this. Google is not your friend. And I use that expression because I remember, you know, speaking of the comment to Susanna about the collateral murder thing, while I was there at Westar, one gentleman there, I remember we were in the office, and the way he said it, he said, Google is your friend. I didn't respond at the time, but I, you know, even then in my mind, I was saying, that was stupid. That was wrong. You are dead wrong. Google is not your friend. You're the product to them. And that is such a big deal. Again, it's controlling, you know, we mentioned the media matrix thing. It's controlling the mind of the audience. Controlling the narrative. That is the purpose behind this. And most people, you know, especially you get to the technology gobbledygook and so forth. Most people don't know and don't care. It's free. No, it's not. So I'm hoping to find, because it's been the focus, and I've made reasonable progress today. I'm hoping the door will open here soon, especially now that maybe tomorrow or Monday I'll have something to show and get some people involved who will get somebody else who will get, and then maybe finally the connection comes and I have the person to drive this. That's my hope. But again, you know, it's not like, well, it's never happened before. No, it's happened many times, you know. The connection with, well, it was the CEO of Atari, but he got me a connection with Taito America, which was a lot of money. The ad that got me the, you know, onto the New York Stock Exchange, you know, to put all the electronics there. And then, of course, the connection that got us into the hosiery industry, which was millions. That's where we made literally many millions of dollars. And so many other places. It's just these, you know, one of the ones I was so fascinated. Way back in probably from the 70s, but 80s. 80s and 90s, when you wanted to make a printed circuit board, this was still done very much with film, because you made it used to be it was actually hand taped. I did that once when I was in high school, to make these boards, you have a film with all the lines for the traces that are used. You expose the light and do the etching and whatnot. But the way that film was exposed was a device called a photoplotter. And the dominant player in the field was a company called Gerber Scientific. And, you know, over the years, they improved their design and whatnot, and they needed a new board because, this, you know, again, this is 1980s technology. They went to a company called Heritage Systems, and we developed a board for them to put into their photoplotter. And I thought, so for a while we had a really, you know, we you know, it's those kind of things. You know, we got it with Gerber Scientific. We got it with Rand McNally to do the printers for airline tickets and whatnot. It's kind of like you get this tiny little piece of something, and you know, it's kind of like you have an impact there. I find that so fascinating. But the thing about Gerber Scientific is we used their technology to make the images for printed circuit boards, their photoplotter, to make a design so they could use the photoplotter to make a board for their photoplotter, for the obviously next generation. I just find it fascinating when technology goes from one generation to the next using the same technology that you did previously. It goes back to, I think it's, what's his name? Isaac Newton. I think he's the one who said it. If I've seen further than others, because I've stood on the shoulders of giants. I find that fascinating because, I'm building on computers that were done by people who have developed the electronics and whatnot years ago. They go back to, Babbage and whatnot, who developed some of the early concepts, or Baudot, who did a lot of the communication stuff. But anyway, I just find that that's fascinating. I'm getting off. Sorry. I got my card back from Susanna today, which obviously this was an act of love. The response, the yellow tag here, was an act of hate. I did send my card to Erica Lee because she's my girl. She's closed herself off to me, but she's still my girl. And obviously so is Susanna, but she obviously doesn't know. Emails happening. And again, that's the foundation for the other things. And Lord willing, this will transpire. It would be nice to end the day. You know, I've had easily a 12-hour day of work. It'd be nice to end the day and snuggle up with my lady as I've done in the past. I would like to do that in the future. Now with a different lady. There's only one lady for me. One and one alone. I will not turn to another. I made that very clear with marriage defined and commitment beyond. I have one lady. I don't need another one. That's one of the reasons why I can work 12-hour days. because I'm dedicated to one lady. Her right there. I love that lady. Ah, yes, right over here. I love that lady. Dorothy Jean, my lady, my wife, the woman I love and adore, the woman who committed her life to me, the woman who wrote right there, John, or Dottie Jane loves John. John still loves Dottie Jane, beyond question. My lady, I love you, and I want you back.